We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
Hey, it's Friday. We made it. We made it. You made it. Hope your Friday's going well. Hope your holiday shopping is under control. Oh, man. How is it already the seventh day of December? It's my mom's birthday. She passed away about 6 years ago, so think about her every day, but especially today. Hug your mom. Hug your mom. Jor is off today. She's back on Monday. Hopefully Jor is somewhere warm and sunny and applying generous amounts of sunscreen. I'm not sure where exactly she is, but she's not here. But we shall carry on. In the show, coming up, the latest on the Mueller investigation, we ask you, what the heck should we do with that $1.54 billion projected surplus? Yeah, a lot of different opinions about how that money should be spent. Curious to get your feedback. The Blenders are going to be in studio in the 4 o'clock hour. That'll be fun. Take a break from politics and listen to some great music. Get into the holiday spirit, the Christmas spirit. And 5 o'clock hour, Craig Blacklock. You may have seen his photography. Unbelievable. He's focused in the past a lot on Lake Superior, but he has an amazing book out about the St. Croix watershed. And I want to talk to him about his love of the outdoors and why he wrote the book and what his legacy is. In the meantime, did you hear about Kevin Hart? Did you hear how Twitter caught up with him and bit him in the butt? Here's a quote.
If you don't believe that people change, grow, evolve as they get older, I don't know what to tell you. If you want to hold people in a position where they always have to justify or explain their past, then do you. I'm the wrong guy, man.
That was Kevin Hart. And curious to get your thoughts on this, if you have any thoughts on this. Here's the deal. Comedian Kevin Hart dropped out as the Oscar host. Not necessarily his choice. Of course, we're talking about the Academy Awards. He stepped down from what he called his dream job after homophobic tweets resurfaced this week. In one of those tweets, now granted, this is back in 2011, and I agree, people evolve, your opinions evolve, hopefully over time. You change. All of us change, hopefully. But back in 2011, in a now-deleted tweet, the comedian actor said, quote, "Yo, if my son comes home and tries to play with my daughter's dollhouse, I'm going to break it over his head and say in my voice, stop, that's gay." The Academy apparently asked Hart to apologize. He declined, citing previous apologies. In his announcement that he'd be stepping down, he did in fact apologize for his insensitive words from the past. Quote, "I sincerely apologize to the LGBTQ community for my insensitive words from my past. I'm sorry that I hurt people. I am evolving and want to continue to do so. My goal is to bring people together, not tear us apart. Much love and appreciation to the Academy. I hope we can meet again." So, he apologized. He was the big, you know, he was the bigger man. He took ownership for his words and said, "I was wrong and I've evolved. I've changed. I no longer believe that." But to me, my immediate reaction was, oh, my God, you know, what people post on Twitter, which is public, right? I mean, you're putting that out for anyone and everyone to see. And I'm always amazed how people don't take that into consideration when they're posting. And they say things, maybe in anger, that they come to regret. And I can't tell you the number of CEOs and managers, the first thing they look at when deciding whether to hire somebody after they get the application, the first thing they look at is social media. Who is this person? What have they posted? What have they said publicly? You know, if you have a private chat with a friend, that's one thing. You post it on Twitter, it's a digital megaphone, global reach, it's out there. And I guess, yeah, you can go back and delete your tweets, but can you delete anything on the internet? Oh, boy. So, again, there but for the grace of God. I try to be very careful about what I post, and I use the mom rule. I try not to post anything that would bring embarrassment to my late mother. Susan Blanche, I still hear her in my voice, in my head. I hear her voice. It's like, what are you thinking? No. You shouldn't be thinking that, and you sure as heck shouldn't be saying that. Are you on Twitter? Susan Blanche producing today.
Only for work. No, I don't do that. I'm not on any social media. I mean, I have a Facebook page, and I have a Twitter, and I frankly don't do it. I'm not interested, and I don't think other people are interested. I think I've made 5 Facebook posts in the 10 years that I've had Facebook.
So they're not going to find much when they mine your data stream,
no.
Right? There's not. And I feel the same way with Facebook more than ever. I don't want to put any personal information in there, any private information. Twitter, though, I mean, I do still get some useful information. I like Instagram, just photos. Show me your photo. I'm fine staring at your photo. But Facebook, so often you get caught up on that treadmill. Look at my perfect family. Look at my perfect life, my perfect vacation. My perfect smile.
And, you know, people use those filters now to take pictures of themselves that totally makes you asymmetric. Your face is now symmetrical and every blemish is gone. And it's like, you really don't look like that. And it's just, it adds to the fakeness to me when I see those filtered images when people put their photos up on their social media sites.
You know, we have our real lives and then we have our online lives, right?
That's about it. Yeah.
And I think young people especially, I mean, it's hard enough for adults to try to keep up and curate your online life. But for young people especially, I think the pressure is on. And yesterday we had a horrifying statistic about the percentage of 11th graders in Shakopee who have talked about taking their lives or tried to take their lives. Huge numbers, like 18% of girls, 8% of boys have attempted to take their lives in Shakopee. And it's not just a Shakopee thing.
This isn't something that they've broadcast on their social media, though, is
it?
No. This is they have found.
They did an anonymous online survey, and the Minnesota Department of Health makes this data available. And it just made me do a triple take that, again, trying to keep up with the Joneses online as well as in your real life. I mean, so I don't know. One of our listeners says, Paul, we've become a population of humorless pansies. The entertainment community can suck an egg. I grew up on Mad Magazine and National Lampoon. So did I. I remember National Lampoon, though, and Cracked Magazine. All right. So much for my rant. Just be careful what you tweet. Follow the mom rule. Nothing you wouldn't want your mother to read, right? When we come back, Tim Lammers, speaking of acting and speaking of Hollywood, we have some of his picks. The very latest from Tim Lammer's movie review up next on CCO.
Mary.
Poppins, you came back.
You seem hardly to have aged at all.
Really? One never discusses a woman's age, Michael. Would have hoped I taught you better. What brings you here after all this time?
Same thing that brought me the first time. I've come to look after the bank's children.
Us?
Oh, yes, you too.
A Mary Poppins remake? What's going on? Tim Lammer's movie review brought to you by Bradshaw and Bryant, personal injury attorneys seeking justice for the injured. Find them at MinnesotaPersonalInjury.com. Mr. Lammers, happy Friday, man. Welcome.
Thank you, Paul. Happy Friday to you as well. What is going on is that Mary Poppins is back after 54 years, probably the longest space I've ever seen between an original film and a sequel.
She's aged well. Yeah, she's aged very well. She looks good.
And so Emily Blunt is Mary Poppins now. Mm-hmm. The Banks children are grown up. One of them has children of his own. And they're in danger of losing the Banks family home. So Mary Poppins needs to help the Banks children and the young children figure things out before things are too late. I can't review the film yet because I've seen it, but it's just too early. There's a review embargo. It's a big movie. But I can tell you that if you love the first one, you will not be disappointed in this. It's got the music. It's got the spectacular sets and the costumes and animation, actual hand-drawn animation like that first film. With Dick Van Dyke and Julie Andrews. And Dick Van Dyke does appear in a cameo in this one. Julie Andrews does not. She passed it up because she didn't want to take anything away from Emily Blunt in this particular picture.
Boy, Mary Andrews, tough act to follow, but keeping an open mind.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, it's a tough, there's no question, big shoes to fill, and I'll tell you more about it on the 19th when it opens.
When you can. All right, here's a preview of Aquaman.
It's the exact spot that Volko gave me my first swimming lesson.
I already know how to swim.
Not even close. You have to forget all the teaching of the surface world. Go deeper. Uncover your Atlantean instincts.
Tim, I've seen some of the previews, some of the trailers on the tube, and it looks intriguing. What do you make of Aquaman?
Well, you know, what DC Comics hopes is that because all of their films pretty much, apart from Wonder Woman, have pretty much hit the wall. They're not big hits like Marvel films, and they're hoping that Aquaman, for the lack of better words, pulls them out of the depths of despair because, you know, it's the film franchise just isn't working so far when you put all the characters together. But when they have their own origin story, and this is what is the case with Aquaman, Jason Momoa, we met him already in Justice League, so we know he has presence. He's got great charisma. He's a pretty funny guy. And the filmmaking looks really, really good. I haven't seen the picture yet. It's going to be previewing next week. But, you know, just taking a quick look now, I'm thinking that there's hope that Jason Momoa and Aquaman will save the DC movie universe.
All right. Tim Lammers, you're a force of nature. Thank you for the preview and getting us excited about those flicks.
Oh, yeah. Lots more to come. Another one is Vice, starring Christian Bale as Vice.
All right. Tim Lammers, out of time. The stock market is down big time. We're going to have an update from CBS next. Another day. More political fireworks. Are you surprised? Just trying to keep up. We're all trying to keep up. Special counsel Robert Mueller's team has made it clear to Paul Manafort's attorneys that they believe the former Trump campaign chair is lying to them about President Donald Trump. This, according to the president's attorney, Rudy Giuliani. Right now, Mueller's team is describing to a federal court the alleged ties and lies, apparently told by Manafort, that led to the disruption of the cooperation agreement. So again, people are reading the tea leaves, and one of those people reading the tea leaves is MinnPost Washington, D.C. correspondent Sam Brody, who is kind enough to carve some time out to try to get us up to speed on the very latest. Sam, welcome to the show.
Yeah, good to be with you, Paul.
You're trying to keep up just like the rest of us. And my understanding is that we don't know exactly what Mueller has released yet. I guess Rudy Giuliani got wind of some of these things coming down. But what do you make of this, and what should listeners know? What's the latest?
Yeah, so you've described really kind of the latest. This is a story that CNN broke. We're all kind of waiting for a 5 p.m. Eastern time deadline for Mueller's team to submit their sentencing memo for Michael Cohen, the president's personal lawyer, whose case has attracted a lot of attention. But with respect to Manafort, that's interesting news because aside from Cohen, this is somebody who kind of could be positioned as really a star witness in the Russia investigation if he wanted to play along with Mueller's team. Now, I think people should know that back in September, which feels like a million years ago in the speed and pace of this investigation, Manafort entered into a plea arrangement with Mueller's team, suggesting that he would provide some information that would be useful for them in order to receive a less harsh punishment and fewer years in prison, because he was staring down a lot of prison time.
Right.
And some recent reporting has indicated that trust has kind of broken down between Mueller's team and Manafort's lawyers. The New York Times reported last week that Manafort's lawyers were talking to Trump's lawyers about Manafort's conversations with the special counsel's team. That's something that the Times framed pretty explicitly as an unusual arrangement. I believe they said a highly unusual arrangement. So that kind of contributed to the degrading of trust there. But kind of what spotlight here kind of this afternoon in the CNN report is that Mueller's team thinks Manafort is lying about the fateful 2016 Trump Tower meeting, which has become a real central focus of Mueller's investigation. The question is whether Trump, who was then a candidate, knew that his son and his son-in-law and other campaign officials were meeting with a Russian lawyer who was promising some dirt on Hillary Clinton ahead of the election. And Mueller is definitely interested in whether Trump knew about that and could be a really, really vital link in establishing some kind of tie between Russian-backed entities or really specifically Russian entities and Trump himself during the campaign.
Would that ultimately go to collusion, conspiracy? Do we even know at this point?
We don't really know at this point, but the thing to focus on, I think, at this point is how many degrees of separation there was from Trump. Up until this point, Trump could, you know, plausibly say that whatever was happening, any kind of communication that was happening with Russian entities during the campaign, that he didn't know about it, that it was out of his purview, and that if it were his campaign advisors doing it, that it wasn't his problem and that he shouldn't be at fault. I'm not sure, explicitly what the legal implications would be, but it would certainly be a pretty big finding for Mueller's investigation if they were able to conclude with some certainty that Trump personally knew that his campaign was involved in getting dirt on Hillary Clinton's campaign from Russia. That would certainly be a game changer.
And it's the Russia part, right? I mean, campaigns are always getting dirt on their opponents in the United States. I mean, what sets this apart is possibly going to a foreign entity, an avowed enemy of the United States, to get dirt on a candidate. That's what sets this apart and creates the legal jeopardy or potential jeopardy. Am I correct on that?
Right. Well, things get complicated there. But, you know, these are, you know, Manafort was charged with conspiracy against the United States. That's where the kind of foreign involvement comes in. And, you know, it's illegal for foreign entities to contribute to American campaigns with cash. There is kind of a bright line in the law between kind of domestic involvement, political involvement, that could distinguish kind of your run-of-the-mill opposition research if it were conducted by a foreign entity with maybe an explicit agenda or rooting interest in the election. But kind of another swirling aspect of this very, very complicated to begin with situation is the question of what the president's business interests were or are in Russia. And there's been some interesting reporting to date about what the president may have been up to in terms of a Trump hotel or Trump Tower development in Moscow, which he has denied. He denied on the campaign trail saying, that he had no business interest in Russia. But, in the Michael Cohen case, and we may learn more about this afternoon, he said that he had conversations with people during the campaign about a Trump Tower development in Russia.
That weren't disclosed, perhaps. That's the question, right? He would have to disclose.
The president denied having any, it would run contrary to what the president himself said in 2016,
right.
Which is that he had absolutely no business interest in Russia whatsoever.
Sam, talk to us a little bit about John Kelly, the chief of staff for President Trump. Today, reports coming out that they've been together for, 17 months now, and they are no longer on speaking terms. And some people are saying it's imminent within a few days. John Kelly is out. They're talking about his potential replacements, including Nick Ayers, who's Vice President Pence's chief of staff. He's a leading contender. But apparently there's news now that John Kelly has been interviewed by Robert Mueller's team. Do we know anything more about that? That was what, this summer? Apparently the interviews took place?
Exactly. Yeah. So we do know that Kelly has been interviewed, kind of adding to a long list of people close to Trump who have been interviewed, including Jared Kushner and others. I think this is an interesting backdrop of all this stuff that's happening with Mueller and the president's legal issues. It's sort of the ongoing turmoil in his White House. Kelly has sort of become a joke in Washington political and media circles, that John Kelly is almost perennially on the rocks. There's always rumors, and there have been rumors for the past few months, that he's sort of on the brink of resigning or getting fired. And seemingly those, he always gets pulled back and sticks around. It does seem to be the case today that it's crossed a line that it hasn't crossed before. These reports that the two men aren't on speaking terms. Now, they've never really liked each other, but Trump and his associates made it somewhat clear that they wanted to avoid really major staff shakeups until after the midterm election. And it's been over a month, and I think we can expect to see some major shakeups in the White House top staff now that the midterms are in the rearview mirror. And the thinking in Washington has been that Kelly would probably be among the first to go post midterms, and it looks like that's going to be the case. What that means for his cooperation or the extent of that cooperation with Mueller's investigation is going to be really interesting to see. Some folks have pointed out on Twitter and elsewhere that there's a lot of high profile officials who've left the Trump administration on not so great terms. Rex Tillerson, who the president personally insulted on Twitter today, to Jeff Sessions, to John Kelly now. And it's interesting to think about if these men would consider cooperating with any kind of investigation into the president.
Last question here, and I don't mean to ambush you. I don't know if you had a chance to read John Dingell's. We're talking about the Democrat from Michigan, Representative John Dingell, the longest serving member of Congress in U.S. history. He had an op-ed which called for the abolition of the Senate and public funding of elections. One of the quotes that struck me, he said, "Elections, like military service, each is an example of duty, honor, and service to country, should be publicly funded. Public service should not be a commodity, and elected officials should not have to rent themselves out to the highest bidder in order to get into or stay in office. If you want to restore trust in government, remove the price tag." John Dingell's words, not mine. Back in 1958, Dingell points out 73% of Americans trusted the government to do the right thing almost always or most of the time. 73%. That number today is 18%. Historic lows. I don't know if you have any comment on that or if a movement is imminent, but a lot of people thinking that his words were quackery, but it's not the first time I've heard somebody complaining about the amount of corporate money that goes into these campaigns. What do you make of this, Sam?
Yeah, no, I actually did read the op-ed, and it's sort of interesting that, Dingell, who is actually the longest-serving House member in history, he was there for a half century. And so this is not a young man, yet he is sort of on the vanguard of opinion within the left wing of the Democratic Party right now, sort of the viewpoint that you summed up there with respect to campaign financing is an idea that's really, really popular on the left, who folks there saw the raft of money that has frankly gone in on both sides and are pretty disgusted with it and are looking for some really kind of strong, bold solutions to counter that. Same thing with the Senate. In the aftermath of the midterm elections, a popular opinion that I was noticing among people on the left was that the Senate appeared to them to be undemocratic, where you had Democrats winning a vast share of popular vote in Senate races, but it doesn't really matter when you have very, very small states that Republicans overwhelmingly won. Whether this translates into any kind of greater movement to abolish the Senate is unlikely. I think, as Dingell notes, this is a multi-generational kind of project. It's really the foundation of you know, governance here in D.C., but it's interesting to see somebody like him come out there with a kind of opinion that's really shared among a lot of the people who are going to be leading the Democratic Party and or at least defining opinion for the Democratic Party in coming years.
Somebody reminded me of the golden rule, Sam. Those with the gold make the rules. I've never forgotten that. And a U.S. senator told me that this person spends – this person said it privately. We were at the same event together, and we were chatting. And this person told me, Paul, I spend 70% of my time raising money. And I just couldn't believe what I was hearing. 70% of your time begging for money instead of legislating, instead of serving their constituents. I don't know.
Right. They hate it. And they all think it's bad. But it's hard to be the person that sticks their neck out and says, well, I'm not going to do that. You're sort of disarming in an arms race. And, you know, it's interesting to look at a lot of the Democrats who've come in, including Dean Phillips from Minnesota, who will take a seat in Congress next year, who said we're not going to take any contributions from corporate PACs or members of Congress. Granted, he was a rich guy. He could give himself some money. But, you know, you could interpret that as the beginning of maybe there's going to be a movement here for candidates to say, you know what? We've got to start somewhere in trying to counter the influence of special interest and making this less about fundraising, because it's a part of the reason why a lot of people are saying no thanks to serving in Congress, because it is such an unappealing way to spend your time. And that senator you talked to probably is not the only lawmaker in this town who feels that way.
Absolutely not. Sam Brody, thank you, sir. Appreciate you joining us today on CCO. Thank you for calling.
Yeah. Thank you.
You bet. Everything else is getting disrupted. Why not politics? Got to be a smarter way to do this. I don't have the answer key, but as a nation, I suspect we can find a smarter way to keep the wheels on the bus. Caller number 8, 651-989-9226. Hugh Jackman tickets, a pair of tickets to go see Hugh Jackman at the XL Energy Center. That is coming up Saturday, June 22nd. So that gives you something to look forward to. Give us a call, 651-989-9226. If you're a Hugh Jackman fan, that could be very, very cool. A couple of things that caught my eye. By the way, the blender's coming up next hour here on CCO. Did you see China is sending a mission to the moon? The Chang'e 4 mission launches tomorrow from the Xichang Satellite Launch Center. That's a 27-day flight for a first-ever attempt to send a lander and a rover to the far side of the moon. How about trying to send a man to the moon and get that man back safely? Well, baby steps. But okay, hey, good luck. I thought that was interesting. The other thing, one of many things that caught my eye today, CNN had to evacuate its New York City offices yesterday. Did you hear about this? A bomb threat. Somebody called in a bomb threat. Five separate bombs. The network went to taped programming and briefly took Don Lemon's CNN Tonight off the air as staffers were evacuated down to the streets. Amid the panic over the threat, CNN Tonight host Don Lemon tweeted, "We are evacuating in the middle of my live show. Bomb threat. We're running taped programming." This incident follows an evacuation in October after the discovery of an actual explosive device addressed to former CIA Director John Brennan. Again, it should be pointed out that no bombs were found last night. NYPD went in and did a thorough search of all the floors, and they found no bombs. But some excitement there. So next hour, again, we have an interview with the Blenders. We also want to find out what you think should be done with that surplus of $1.54 billion. Now, granted, it is a projected surplus. I saw one poll, non-scientific poll, kind of evenly split between using that money and investing it in public infrastructure, transportation, and education, and maybe using it to fund tax cuts. Small business tax cuts? Are taxes too high? What do you think? What should be done with that $1.54 billion surplus? We shall see. By the way, the state's budget reserve account now tops $2 billion, the highest level in state history. And there is a very lively debate taking place at the state capitol already. House Democrats argue that if inflation is taken into account, the projected balance for the next 2 years is a measly $382 million. Republicans have a different take. They're like, why on earth would you tax people or even consider hiking the gas tax if we have such an enormous projected state surplus? We get your feedback. That's coming up at 4:35. Thanks for joining us. Jor is off today. She'll be back on Monday. Hope she's doing well. Thank you for hanging on, and we'll catch you next hour.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.